I know we're running short on time, so I'm just going to dive right in, and I'm going to try to summarize much of what we heard this afternoon. I'm glad this is entitled Learning from Hong Kong. I think what we've seen tonight should make us, as New Yorkers, very humble and should really give us pause. Because frankly, all of the cities that you heard about today are way ahead of us. We are losing ground, and this financial calamity has actually made the situation in New York much more precarious. And I think a lot of this has to do with cultural issues and a lot of cultural baggage we have in New York and as Americans. And Carol said that Hong Kong is Asia's Manhattan. I would like to reverse it. I think New York is actually America's Hong Kong. We actually, and I've said this before publicly, and it's not very popular, I think New York has far more in common with Hong Kong and with Tokyo and Mumbai than it does with Paris and Rome, and actually even London, for that matter. And I'm betting, actually, that for a number of the New York audience members, particularly sort of born and bred Americans, that many of the images you saw here today made you uncomfortable. That it's scary in terms of the amount of density and looks very foreign. That may not be true of all of you, but I'm sure that's true of many. The fact is this is a kind of place where the left and the right in American politics meet in terms of this kind of rejection of a culture of density, which has created environmental problems, created social problems, created a host of problems. And I was interested to hear Chris Ward talk about the dystopia in a movie like Blade Runner, which I think is fundamentally a kind of anti-urban movie. I actually think, when I think of dystopia, I think of movies like The Stepford Wives, or for the younger among you, American Beauty. That, to me, is much more dystopic a vision of that very isolated, scary, and fuel-inefficient suburban model. Carol also mentioned something about the density of affluence, which I thought was a really interesting term in terms of thinking about New York as a more affluent city. In fact, however, and this is where I'll pivot to my company related a little bit, we produce a tremendous amount of affordable housing in New York, and actually the social equity problems that we're trying to face in New York are being much more successfully met here than they are in most of the country because of density issues. Related, actually, is a leader in affordable housing and sustainable development. In fact, part of why I have to run is the U.S. Green Building Council is awarding the company tonight because of what we've done in sustainable development. I just wanted to point out, so in terms of what we've seen today and comparing it to two ongoing kind of New York case studies, Moynihan Station, which Chris Ward mentioned, and the Hudson Rail Yards, which Lee Sander mentioned, versus the extraordinary kind of work we saw today, and where there's success and there's sort of elusive success. So I think there's a lot of success at the rail yards, and it's interesting to think, so this is an MTA piece of property, for those of you who don't know it, it's about 26 acres. We're going through approvals right now. My bet is that this is going to happen. And even with the financial kind of crisis that we've got, it's going to happen. The number 7 subway line is under construction. It is transit-oriented density. And it really, I think, speaks to the genius of the Bloomberg administration that the number 7 was funded outside of the kind of normal ways in which we fund some of the projects that Tom Wright spoke about. And I think it's going to be a fairly successful development. Compare that to what's happened with Moynihan Station, which has been a 15-year struggle to get a new train station built in Midtown to replace Penn Station. It still suffers from massive funding problems. And it also, you know, when we took a run at this as two development firms related in Vornado to try to do very much of the kinds of projects that Mr. Ho showed, that Paul just recently showed, met with an extraordinarily difficult time. Why is that? Well, there was a notion that, first of all, that you shouldn't build that kind of density around the station. You shouldn't have those kinds of mix of uses, that kind of retail, et cetera. That instead, what we should build is a big empty glass box for a train station that no one can afford, right? And so that is a basic crisis in terms of how to build our infrastructure, I think, and really points to the difference in terms of what we do well as a city, which is development on its own, versus what we do poorly as a city, which is build infrastructure that supports that density. So I'm just going to close real quickly and turn it over to the panel in terms of a couple of questions about how it is we produce this culture of density. I'm especially interested in hearing from Paul, since he's such a worldly guy, what he thinks about in terms of the culture of density in the United States versus other places where he's worked. I would just very quickly summarize with a couple of points where I think we could do better and where we could learn from Hong Kong. Design is clearly one of them. I thought what was shown in terms of getting the unions to work together in a more innovative way to do different things in terms of how we build tall structures, clearly a great point. Our environmental impact process, completely flawed. Our regulatory process for a project like Moynihan Station, probably over 15 million dollars has been spent on environmental work that no one will ever read, that is its own kind of workfare program for lawyers and consultants, but doesn't get us any buildings. We need to do public-private partnerships more and be less scared of them. We need to capture land use value around train stations, which is exactly what Mr. Ho talked about. We've done basically a horrible job at this. The only place where it's worked successfully is Hudson Yards. And we need to build infrastructure by getting more dollars from DC. I'm hopeful that's going to happen starting in 2009. We send about $18 billion to Washington, DC that we do not get back. And so I think it's critical for that lobbying part of our city to work on those questions. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the great panel we've got here and see if that sparks any discussion.